to start very basically, what got you interested in science in general?
When I don't understand how things work, I'm curious. It bothers me when I don't understand how things work. I'd like to understand how things work. I want to understand how things work. I can repeat that for a long time.
So, what got you into synthetic biology specifically?
So, I'd like to understand how biology works, how living organisms work.
Yeah.
So I started thinking about why it's been so hard to understand biology. And the conclusion I've come to, and it's a very preliminary conclusion that we have to test, is that the biological systems that we find in nature are not themselves designed by nature, by evolution, to be easy to understand. And so if I wanted to have biology that I understand, I'd be better off building it myself. In the same way that you might try and understand a car or a bicycle by taking it apart and having the pieces all over your lawn, but you're going to have a much better understanding of a car or bicycle if you take the bits and pieces and put it together to build one from scratch. And so that's why I got interested in synthetic biology. I want to understand how the living world works, but I think it's going to be a lot easier if I build it from scratch.
So that sort of takes us in the next direction. How would you define synthetic biology? What is it, and what does it actually synthesize?
There's a couple different ways to look at it. I mean, for me, I'm trained as an engineer, right? So my interest is to be able to routinely and reliably, quickly, easily, cheaply, put together the bits and pieces of biology to make new and useful things, right? So the goal of synthetic biology is to make routine the engineering, the programming of living organisms, right? So if you think about how you use a computer today, how you program a computer today, even though it might sound like a challenging thing to do, in relative and absolute terms, it's quite easy to program a computer. So how do we get to some future where the programming of living systems by changing their DNA and other things is as simple and straightforward and reliable and understandable as the programming of computers are today? So that's my, you know, take on synthetic biology. It's a combination of what are the things we'd actually like to get biology to do on our behalf, combined with what are the tools, technology platforms, the basic infrastructure that would help us get to that endpoint more reliably and let more people get there.
So
other people, yeah, there's another perspective on the field, which is not an engineering perspective. The scientific perspective on the field is, I don't understand something until I can put it back together, right? And the last 70 years of biology has been a tremendous success taking things apart, reading out the genomes, but we've never put things back together, right? And so again, we can go back to the idea of, you take your father's car, you rip it apart, it's all over the lawn, you know, you sort of understand what's going on, but until you put it back together, you're not really going to convince anybody that you actually understand what you're doing. So the biologist's approach to synthetic biology is to demonstrate understanding, a sufficiency of understanding by reconstitution.
So what part of that do you think makes synthetic biology such a hot field right now, makes it so popular?
It's fun. You get to build stuff, right? I mean, and as mentioned before, right, building is a great way to learn, right? You might fail, you might not succeed, but you're going to be succeeding for reasons that are physical reasons that you can go follow up on. The other thing to say is, you know, 70 years ago, it was the physicists who came into biology and really shook things up. I suspect that's what's happening now is the engineers are coming into biology, and they're going to shake things up in a complementary, different way, but as significant. And if you ask an engineer, right, what they want to do in their heart, they want to make something, right? And so, or if you want to get an engineering undergraduate, high school student, anybody interested in how proteins bind DNA, somebody coming from an engineering perspective, it's much more powerful to say, well, what we want to do is we want 100 DNA binding proteins that each recognize their own site on the DNA and not any of the others. So use some computer modeling to figure out the specificity of this interaction between the protein and the DNA. So we can forward engineer 100 different variants. Then we're going to use these to make Boolean logic so we can implement a genetically encoded computer. The other last thing to say is we've developed some technologies that make it easy. Not easy, I mean easier. So DNA synthesis is getting better and better and better, which means that the cost and time to compile one of your designs isn't 6 years, it might be 6 weeks, which is still slow, but it's not infinitely slow. We have things like the Registry of Standard Biological Parts as a tool for organizing information about the bits and pieces, right? And so, and we've created a community, right, where people now can talk to one another and have fun with what they're doing. So it's a combination of basic science combined with foundational technologies combined with the celebration of the work that you know, sort of letting things happen.
So with these decreasing downtimes between projects and so on, how do you see synthetic biology changing the world as we know it in the future once it's become more widely used and faster and cheaper?
Well, it's already possible to redesign genomes. So you could take a genome from a natural biological system and do a systematic redesign on it. A group in Japan just last year took the genome of one organism and moved it into another organism. So what are you going to do with that capability? Well, you could start to redesign approximately any organism you want. So what's the impact of that? Lots of things we could imagine. Genomes that are designed to be understandable, genomes that are whose evolution is directed by their designers as opposed to by nature. Imagine how that impacts health and medicine. Imagine the societal conversations around the application of that technology. So that's one, you know, off the top example. The other thing, you know, is biology isn't only about health and medicine. Biology can be viewed from an engineer's perspective as a technology platform for doing all sorts of stuff, right? So this wood on the desk is made by biology. You know, the material that I'm wearing is made by biology. The, you know, chemicals that I'm eating, right, are made by biology. You know, the energy comes from biology, right? So biological systems are really good at materials construction, chemical production, energy production, information processing, yada, yada, yada. What happens as we get better at programming living systems to do those things on our behalf? You know, I'm trained as a structural engineer, right, as an undergraduate, like reinforced concrete and steel, right? So I'd like to be able to grow really big things, you know, like at my own house. I'd like to be able to grow my house from scratch, from a tree. And if I can do that, then I get to retire, right? So the problem with the question is it's very quickly to talk about these fantastical applications that are sort of science fiction. And the trick then is to map them into some path where we can make incremental progress towards those goals. And I think what you're seeing right now is much of the thinking and investment in the research community is how to make all of this easier, right? So that we can try more stuff more quickly, right? So it's investing in the foundational infrastructure.
So you said that you were trained as a structural engineer, and one of the big emphases of synthetic and computational biology is that you really are at the crossroads of a lot of different fields. Can you describe a little what it's like to have, you know, things coming in from so many different fields?
It's nice to be able to learn from. It's nice to be able to learn from different communities, right? Everybody views the world from a slightly different perspective. And sometimes there's enough people who gather around one perspective to become a field or a community, right? Biology, civil engineering, electrical engineering, chemistry, physics, mathematics, computer science. Lined up against somebody who might be a computational biologist who uses, say, the narrative, the story developed by the experimental biologist to try and produce some computable representation of a biological system that supports analysis, right? Oh, I predict it'll go do this, or simulation, right? Well, let's just run the numbers in the computer and see what happens. If you start on the, you know, to give you a specific example of how things go back and forth, right? If you take the narratives that come out of experimental biology and try and put them into a computable framework, the computer forces you to be quite precise about what you're saying. And you'll quickly find the gaps and the holes in one's understanding of how the biology is working. And you'll go back naively and ask the experimental biologist, hey, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? And like you have a list of 100 things. And they'll go, give me a break. We don't know any of that. Right? And you're like, well, how am I going to model this? So like, I don't know. You'll have to make some assumptions, right? Okay, well, what good is this model going to be? Well, I don't know. Let's just, you know, at least it's good enough to help us, to force us, rather, to articulate what we don't know. And then you make some assumptions, and you do your model, and you see what the predictions are, and oftentimes they're wrong, right? So you go back and say, well, you should do this experiment for me, you experimental biologist. And the experimental biologist goes, screw you, right? You know, I've got 300 experiments I want to do, and your experiment, that's not mine, you know, that's not the most experiment I could do. If you think that experiment's so important, you do it, right? And now you've got these computational biologists who maybe they have to start doing experiments, right? And as soon as they start doing experiments, maybe they'll start to think about, now how did I really represent this biological system on the computer? Oh yeah, maybe I was using that physics framework from Dan Gillespie, the mathematics which were derived in 1976. That's this hard sphere Dilute gas approximation. And now that I look at these organisms under the microscope, that doesn't look right at all, right? We got to go back and revisit our underlying physics and math, right? Right. So the great reward of being able to pass between perspectives and groups is it forces you to confront the biases and gross approximations in any one group. And that's tremendously rewarding. The only trick I know for how to do a good job of going back and forth is you need to be careful not to listen to what other people tell you. Because everybody's going to try and tell you what it is that you should be doing. And you have to hear what they're saying, but not necessarily take it as face value, like, oh, I'm going to go do this, because that's what you say is the right thing to do. You really have to be a good listener, but a critical evaluator of what you're hearing. Because each group is going to try and promulgate its dogma and ideology, right, and the belief system that it has. This is how we think about biology. This is how we think about computation. Yeah. You know, you gotta be careful about stuff like that.
So just to step back a second, what's a typical day like for you?
Me?
A day in the life.
Now? I don't have a good way of describing it. It's just lots of meetings about a lot of different things. So I feel like I'm an enzyme, basically, right? I mean, I just sort of try and help stuff to happen. So every now and then I get a little bit of time to think. I had this question, are we discovering more about biology? Are we discovering about biology faster or slower than nature is inventing new biology? Right? Are we winning the race, or are we catching up, or are we falling behind? I didn't know, right? So I didn't know how to answer the question, right? So I was sort of sitting around trying to think about how I'd frame that. And so I thought where I'd start would be to estimate the total amount of DNA on the planet, right? How many base pairs of DNA is on planet Earth today, right? I don't know. So I just did some back of the envelope calculations. This number could be completely wrong, but my estimate was it was about 10 to the 35th base pairs of DNA on the planet. All right, so then is, well, so how good are we at sequencing DNA? What is the worldwide sequencing capacity? I don't know that number either, but I did some estimates. I think I overestimated it as 10 to the 11th base pairs of DNA per month can be sequenced, which means that it would take about 10 to the 24th months, about one mole of months, to sequence all of the DNA on the planet, which initially leads me to believe that we got a lot of work to do in biology. I was having a conversation with a political theorist, and they were asking me, why am I interested in synthetic biology? And the short answer to them was, dissatisfied with my inability to understand the natural world, I'm trying to construct a synthetic world, which is easier for me to understand, right? And they're like, well, how do you know that you're not going to finish understanding the natural world? I don't know. Right, so those are the sorts of things I spend my own time on, for better or worse.
What tends to inspire the kinds of projects you work on? Where do you draw your inspiration from?
My motivation is, five, 10, 15, 20 years from now, anybody who wants to is able to, dream up a useful biological system and pull it off, right? Not without having to go through some big research process, right? It's like, we want to make this thing okay.
Can you think of the first time you had sort of a eureka moment of, oh my God, I know how this could work? And do you have a memory of the first time that the thing sort of clicked?
It's every day. I think one of the things about being a good researcher is you want to critically evaluate what you're doing frequently, right? Because that's the only, because you're going to make, I make mistakes all the time in terms of deciding what I think is important and how to invest my own energy and how to advise people. And if if I had decided, I can give you specific, I mean, I can give you some of the early examples, on 1994 or thereabouts, when I was first starting to experience as a young graduate student molecular genetics and looking at the genomes of phage, bacterial viruses, it's immediately obvious when you encounter the DNA sequence that this is a program, and thus you could change it, right? So let's go change this, right? And then you have to figure out why and how. It's a series of realizations, and it could be that you would convince me, or anybody reading this would convince me that the path that I'm currently on is not the best path to this ultimate goal of understanding biology, and that we should get off it, and here's another one, and that'd be great, and that'd be another moment. And so there's lots.
What do you like most about your job?
A lot of different stuff to do. Get to interact with lots of different people, get to learn a tremendous amount. The research community is a worldwide community, it's international, so I probably go to 10 different countries a year, and the people in research are some of the coolest, interesting, nicest people you're ever going to meet, and so it's a great way, it's just a great experience, and I like the satisfaction of, for me, a very basic motivation is if I can provide more agency, more ability for people to be constructive, to make stuff, I think that there's something about that which is what is the very essence of what it means to be alive. And so being able to do that and in a position where I could contribute to that is extraordinarily rewarding.
What gave you the whole idea for the comic strip?
So I was out at a meeting in Los Angeles, half the people at the meeting were artists, and the other half of the people at the meeting were scientists and engineers, researchers. And the purpose of the meeting was to think about imagery and visualization in the context of research. Meeting was organized by Felice Frankel, who's this amazing scientific photographer. She's got this book, Envisioning Science. And so what Felice did in organizing this meeting was she asked everybody to send in a picture that was representative of their work. And they would be printed up on the name tags. And so I'm walking around the first day of the meeting, and I've got my picture, and I had put a picture of a genetic device that we've been using in classes to try and teach this concept of how to define genetic devices so that they could be reused. I was very proud of this picture of my genetic device on my name tag. And this guy comes up to me, and he's all excited. He's like, "Hi, what's that?" Right? And I'm like, "Well, do you know anything about DNA?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah." Right? "What's a genetically encoded inverter?" Right? He's like, "Cool, tell me how it works." Right? Where an inverter is just this device. And I tell him the story about how a genetically encoded inverter works. And he goes, I finish my story, he goes, "That sucks." And I'm like, "What?" You know? He's like, "That's horrible." I'm like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Well, you just told me a story for how that device works. But what you have on your name tag is an image, right? So it's an image, but it has no meaning, right? You need a comic, right?" And I'm like, "Who are you?" Right? He's like, "Oh, my name's Larry Gonick. I wrote the Cartoon Guide for Genetics," right? Which is this great comic book on genetics, right? And I was like, "Yeah, all right, you're right. How do I make a comic?" Right? He's like, "Oh, you just go make one." And so on the way home, I sketched out the comic strip, and my assistant here actually is also a screenwriter, and she happened to know the guy who does the storyboards for Spider-Man, and when she saw my initial sketches, she said, "They suck." We convinced Chuck, the illustrator out in Los Angeles, to do the drawings for us. So hopefully it's a teaching tool. I have no idea if it works or not. So people should check it out and provide some feedback.
All right. So... who are your heroes in biology and then just in everyday life in general? Who might you name as, you know, people you look up to?
Here at MIT, there's some people. Tom Knight and Jerry Sussman are two people in engineering here at MIT. They're the folks who have taught me about engineering. I thought when I was coming to MIT as an engineer that I needed to learn a lot more biology, which is true, but what I really needed to learn was more engineering, because I had learned a whole bunch of facts and figures and equations and stuff to do with computers, but nobody had ever sat me down and said, you know, this is what makes engineering go. And those are two guys who have been here for a while, and they remember. They're heroes for me because they remember what engineering was like before it exists, right? How you have to get it started, right? So if you go talk to Jerry, he can tell you about the patents that Samuel Morse filed on the telegraph and stuff like that. Sidney Brenner and Roger Brent are two biologists of different generations, maybe 15 years older than me, another 45 years older than me. Sidney, because of his ability to teach me the lesson of how important it is to choose what it is that you're working on and to not just default into, well, you know, somebody says this is an important problem, so I'm going to do it, right? But really, if you're a researcher, if you're a scientist, you want to be actively, consciously choosing what you're working on. Why is it an important problem? And Sidney is a great teacher of that lesson. Roger, for being absolutely intellectually honest, and it's a complimentary lesson, but just of the importance of being extraordinarily careful to do the best you can to say what you believe. And from that, you know, you can make stuff happen. But maybe we'll leave it at that. Two biologists and two engineers. There's some artists I should thank. But
so, what do you think makes for a successful scientist?
Somebody's having fun doing what they're doing. A successful scientist is somebody who wakes up in the morning and that's what they're thinking about. right? You know, you're in the shower and you're wondering, ah, you know, like, you know, it's like, huh, like, you know, or you can't wait to get into the lab or talk to somebody about it. Whether or not you ever understand something or not, that's actually, I consider to be optional. From my perspective, the most important thing you can learn in graduate school is how to become a fully independent researcher, right? Because that's what you're going to go do, right? So that might mean, notice that that might mean that not one of your experiments succeeds, right? But rather, if that's the case, you use that as an experience, as substrate for learning how to recognize when experiments aren't working, right? And to decide and choose to do something new, right? And if you get really, really good at that, then over time, some of your experiments will start working, right? I mean, the best scientists I've seen are the people who recognize when things are failing and abandon them without feeling bad. It was not the right time to ask this question. It was not the right, we didn't have the right technology to do these experiments. I thought this was a good idea. Actually, it's a bad idea. And so the best, goodest, most fun, loving, happy scientists I know are the ones who are sort of doing this high throughput turnover of, let's try this. Oh, you know, and you got to be careful to invest enough energy to take something to some minimal, you know, point of completion so you can honestly evaluate, accurately evaluate what's going on, right? If you do enough experiments as a scientist, you'll be a good scientist because 24 of your 100 experiments will work. And the best scientists I know who are having the most fun are the ones who are able to do that rapid turnover.
My next question was going to be what makes for a happy scientist, but it seems like successful and happy for you are sort of the...
I don't see what I'm doing as work, right? I mean, I'm doing what I want to be doing, and if I wasn't, I would change it. If at some point in the future, I'd rather be raising pheasants in southern France or northern France or wherever they raise pheasants in France, I presume I would go do that. But it's an active choice to be here, and it's hard to imagine being in research under different conditions.
So if you hadn't gone into synthetic biology, what do you think you would be doing right now? Do you have any...
Surfing? I don't know.
I like
writing,
surfing.
Writing poetry? Writing poetry and surfing, probably in the other order.
So I guess the last question is for our listeners and readers who are interested in computational biology and systems and synthetic biology. Do you have any advice just for aspiring scientists in general, for people who want to go into this kind of field?
In biology? In the areas you listed?
In the areas I listed, but in really in science in general, just someone who says, you know, I really like science, and they're, you know, a senior in high school. Is there anything they ought to know or anything... any advice you have?
When you encounter research in biology, it's oftentimes so far removed from the physical consideration of the organism. And so I don't mean just go study physics, right? But rather, whenever you're thinking about biology, think about it in the context of it's a physical object that has to be doing something in the three-dimensional world, right? The other thing to say is people express great wonderment and excitement and almost this sort of magical relationship with the living world. And it's a great, appropriate perspective to have. But I think over the coming years, faster than most expect, we'll see a transition in biology where it becomes much simpler and easier to engineer things, engineer new living systems. And we don't actually know how to do that right now, but there are lessons buried in the lore and wisdom of other engineering disciplines. And so some appreciation of the tools of engineering, right? So instead of celebrating biological complexity, which is what scientists often want to do, an engineer would strive for simplicity. And so, you know, that sounds almost sort of, you know, like Zen you know. I don't mean it that way, but instead of just imagining the world as it exists and as we inherit it from nature, I think it's becoming increasingly important that we understand how to imagine worlds that might be, how we would choose whether or not to design and construct them.
Thank you so much for talking to
me. Yeah.
It's been a real pleasure, and you should get a copy of this. It'll probably come in over the summer.
Okay.